Go ahead and get started. Welcome back. No new announcements. Everybody's aware of homework too. You guys coordinating on Slack. Good. I think that's going to be necessary. Glad you guys are coordinating, taking advantage of some of the resources there. Can you do that throughout the course? Any questions or concerns? Homework or anything else?
Question two for the portion where you like looking at all the favorite apps. How exactly do you want us to be in on this?
Fine to grab some points and curve fit it. You're talking about like the RDS on versus voltage graph or the other one.
Yeah.
You don't need to be all that exact and get something that has roughly the same values and run on it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Which, you know, is requiring you to make some assumptions. We'll throw things like that at you, but I try to make them realistic. So in a real design, what do you get is you get an image in the data sheet with that curve, and you have to kind of say, okay, numerically, how am I going to approximate this to design off it? So, you know, do a reasonable job, but you don't need to, you know, go in and take 100 points on it and, you know, decide exactly what the underlying function is. Yeah, any other questions? Okay, then last time we were beginning to talk about switching loss in just standard PWM type converters. We talked about if we have a synchronous half bridge, what the switching transitions will look like. We've got these switching dead times, and then it really depends on exactly what the operating point of the converter is, how it's designed, what happens during those times. But we can have kind of anything in the spectrum between having just one device diode conduct the whole time, and then the other device turn on with full voltage across it. So what we get at one transition, if this was an asynchronous implementation, if we had our boost with just a diode here, all the way up to if we go to kind of a DCM-like or a soft switching implementation like we talked about in the intro slides, we can have something where during both of these dead times, we get a resonant transition bringing the voltage down and turn on each MOSFET at 0 volts. All depends on how it's designed, what the inductance is, what the operating point is, what the switching frequency is. And we've been talking about parasitics and where they come from in the MOSFET. I'm going to use that to dive into what are kind of a finer grain plot of switching behaviors and analysis of what's going on during the actual switching action of a MOSFET. So we've got these different capacitances for today and maybe the next lecture. We're going to just assume they're all linear as we talk about how things work. So we'll just have a drain to source, a gate to source, and a gate to drain capacitance. In a couple lectures, we'll come back to this and really talk about what's the impact of these nonlinear capacitances, predominantly CGD and CDS, because they are capacitances across this depletion region. And that depletion region expands with higher drain to source voltage, means those capacitances are going to be nonlinear. Their capacitance will change with voltage. CGS has some nonlinearities. It's more or less constant with respect to VDS. It actually has a pretty significant nonlinearity with respect to VGS. And once we turn the device on and create an inversion layer, the capacitance will change significantly. But generally don't worry about the nonlinearity of CGS, because that nonlinearity with respect to VGS is easier to take into account from this curve, which is where we left off last time. There's a curve showing if we drive this device some gate driver and try to bring the gate to source voltage up from 0 to 10 volts. Here is the amount of charge needed to get that voltage on the device. Okay. And as we talk about the switching mechanisms, it will become clear why this has the shape that it has. We kind of mentioned briefly that we're kind of sending charge into CGS here and here, and sending charge into CGD here. And at least part of that should make sense just by looking at it, that on this plateau, we are sending a bunch of charge into the gate, but the gate to source voltage isn't moving. Clearly none of that is going into CGS. We're putting charge on CGS, its voltage should increase. So this curve is gonna tell us, and as you're looking at in the homework, kind of how we drive the FET, and it'll also tell us what sort of losses we get in the process of driving it from a conventional gate driver. So our typical setup, let's sketch a model of our FET and a model of our gate driver. And drive the gate of this FET. So as we looked at before, there's some internal gate resistance of the FET. We have our FET itself with some capacitances, CGD, CGS. And then we've got to have the source connected back to ground of the gate driver. Label our terminals here. Gate driver's job is to provide enough current to rapidly change VGS voltage, bring it high, bring it low. Because we have these significant capacitances, CGS and CGD, any kind of reasonable power converter, these capacitances are large enough that we don't want to drive this thing just directly off a microcontroller output pin or an FPGA output pin. We don't have the drive current necessary to charge and discharge these capacitances quickly. So we use this thing called a gate driver. Gate driver is just a buffer, gives higher current and possibly changes the voltage, provides enough current to be able to quickly drive these capacitances. Like I mentioned before, the way we create that is typically just a bunch of cascaded buffer stages. Something like this, easier to create them with inverters. This is a logic inverter here, driving from some voltage VDR. We got two FETs, turn on this high side FET. We're gonna short the gate up to VDR with some resistance of that FET, trying to pull the gate voltage up, turn on the low side, we're trying to short gate the source out, okay? These two FETs and the gate driver need to be relatively big FETs to keep their resistance low. So then they also have significant gate capacitances because they're big honking FETs. So then we need a slightly smaller pair of FETs to drive them. That'll give us enough current to drive that pair of FETs. These, maybe my output stage has resistance on the ohms. These are maybe tens of ohms. Tens of ohms still has big enough to have significant capacitance, so I need slightly smaller stage to drive those. And then this just goes on, maybe 5 to 7 stages of this. Each of these stages is logic inverter, so I'll just draw the rest of these as the inverter symbol. And here's my PWM input. A bunch of cascaded inverter stages gradually getting bigger and bigger so that each one is big enough to drive the next one until we get big enough to drive the gate. In terms of what's actually going on as a result of that, there may be some delay through here. Some of this will account for some PWM delay, getting our PWM signal through each of these stages. The actual output will be a little bit behind the input. And there may be a little bit of loss in the inverter stages if this gate voltage is anywhere in the middle, both devices are on, but we're trying to drive it relatively quick. Should be relatively little shunt current there, relatively little loss in all of these stages. We can mostly just focus on this stage when we look at the losses associated with turning on and off the set. So in the process of turning this on, we need to do is pull from BDR enough charge down through this high side FET to go into the gate and charge CGD and CGS as much as we need to get VGS up to our target on state volt. Just use 10 volts on this plot. It's an arbitrary number just because the plot has numbers on it. So we need to have current flow during turn on and of off VDR, and it'll be add in here important that we have locally to the gate driver some capacitance here. Should be like our decoupling capacitance of the gate driver. And that'll buffer whatever supply VDR comes from. But to turn on, we're going to be pulling current off that local supply through the gate, and then at least initially down through CGS, and then back. What's IG on? A little bit of it will flow through CGD, back around. So the current's going to be pulled from the gate driver through this FET, go charge those taps. Okay. During the turn off process, we're going to turn on this low side FET. We'll be pulling current off these caps back into here. Okay. So turn on, if we want to sketch an equivalent circuit, more or less like VDR, constant voltage, go through, call RH. RH, as we did before, is the resistance of this guy. This one, RL, for on-state resistance. And then I'll go through RG. And then it'll go into, for the moment, I'm going to neglect whether it goes into CGD or CGS. I'm going to call this called C gate. And it's some equivalent of everything that's going on over here. Okay, so it would be CGD with some different voltage across it and CGS with some different voltage across it. But since I know the total charge that gets there, I don't care as much. I'm going to use this plot instead of any actual capacitance. It's useful to look at the mechanism this way, understand what's going on. So if I treat this as an equivalent circuit, during turn on, I start with a VGS equal to zero. And then to get the full thing on, I want VGS to go to VDR. And I'm going to charge that capacitance through some resistive pathway. So what do I end up with? A typical RC circuit. Looked at this sum in homework one. I get an energy that gets into the gate source capacitor of 1/2 C gate VDR squared. And I have an energy loss equal to that same thing. Energy loss is on these two resistors. Charging a capacitor through some resistive pathway, I lose an equal amount of energy in the resistor to whatever I put in the tap. Everybody get that one on homework one? Everybody get the last part? What happens if RH and RG are zero?
I need to be controversial. The output power of the VDR doesn't equal the energy stored in the capacitor.
Right. So this is still true, even if both those resistances are zero. And there's an instantaneous power dissipation on whatever switch closed to create the circuit where I've got VDR shorted to 0 volt cap. So even if these resistances are gone, I lose an equal amount of energy to whatever I put on that cap.
So what's the other part of aggregate goals?
So this is all losses, heat, and these resistances. EGS is in the cap. And it sits there until we get to turn off.
There is no capacitor, no resistor. Mm-hmm. So the energy supplied by the VDR is still VDR.
So this expression, C gate VDR squared, 1/2, right? Well, it's twice that, C gate VDR squared, right? It's supplied. Yeah. Where does it go?
Yeah.
It's dissipated on the switch element, which we haven't really drawn here. But in order to get this circuit, one of two things happened, right? Either it's just an invalid circuit because I'm basically with zero resistance, I'm shorting a voltage to a different voltage, or I'm saying, okay, some switch closed equivalently, right? And I've got some change color here. Effective switch that was open and it closed at time t equals zero. This starts at zero voltage, so it's a valid circuit, and then the switch closes, right? Then the energy dissipation is on that element. This element, go in and actually solve the differential equation. You have to take some derivatives of direct delta functions. You find that this thing has, at time zero, a delta function of current and a step function in voltage dropping down, but the integral of the product of those two has finite value, and it is 1/2 VGR, C gate VDR squared. It's actually on this ideal switch. That's why we love giving this problem in homework one, because all through introductory power electronics, we tell you ideal switches, they have no power loss, because they're either a short or an open. Shorts have no power loss, open has no power loss. We didn't say anything about what happens when you jump from a short to an open. So even ideal switches can have power loss in the actual instant that they switch. When it is an open, when it is a short, it's lossless. But when it switches between the two, okay.
Are those energy animated by some electronic waves, EMI? So when there is no resistor, so the energy supplied by the VDR is 2 times the energy stored in the capacitor.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe the other half is animated by some electromagnetic waves.
At that point, it's entirely theoretical what happens to that energy, because we have a spike of current that goes to infinity and a perfect step function in voltage. So it is a mathematical answer more than a physics-based answer, right?
Yeah.
If you ever build this with something real, there is some resistance. There's also some inductance. You won't have exactly that. Mathematically, we can say this thing has that power loss on it. You can argue, okay, should we model that as going to heat or going to radiation?
Mm-hmm.
Say heat, but at some point it's a purely mathematical description. Right? Point there is really, it's insensitive to whatever you do with resistance here, right? Even if you try to make this as small as possible, it's going to do nothing to the energy loss of the system from this perspective. Okay. So we end up at the end of this, we've got 1/2 C gate VDR squared stored in this capacitor, equivalent amount of energy lost on these resistors. Sometime later, we go to turn off this FET. We turn on this low side of the output of the gate drive stage. And that basically just shorts things back down. We have RL, RG, and C gate, where C gate is initially charged to VDR, So here we lose whatever's left. All of the energy that remained in that capacitance is just dissipated on this series combination of resistors.
When the MOSFET turns on, CTP discharge or charge?
Depends on what polarity. So if you want to define voltage here as VGD, associate a polarity with the cap to say whether it's charging or discharging. Then in this case, during the turn on transition, it would end up being charged because it's initially got a large negative voltage across it. The drain is some high voltage, right? So it'd be more or less when gate zero, VGD would be minus VDS.
Right.
Essentially, you know, when turn on, it's going to current will go this direction drawn here. The current is coming through the gate to the right, and it'll go up through CGD in this direction. Okay, so our total energy loss is the same in each interval. It's 1/2 C gate VDR squared. Said the C gate is kind of an arbitrary construct, some equivalent of CGS and CGD, both effects. But rather than trying to put some meat on the bones of what C gate is, I'm just going to look at, okay, what happened? I brought in whatever energy came off VDR in the first interval. Half of it was dissipated on these resistance, half of it made it into the cap. Whatever half made it into the cap, I dissipate in the turn off interval. So all of the energy that came out of VDR is lost. None of it gets recycled back or recovered in any kind of way. So then the total energy loss is just however much energy I pulled out of VDR. And without having to deal with all the capacitances, I can say how much charge did I pull out of VDR from this plot on the left. Charge is the integral of current. So that's where we get to this expression here. A total energy supplied by VDR would just be the integral of its voltage and current, VDR times IDR. Well, VDR is constant, so I can pull that out of the integral. And then IDR is, during the turn on, the same thing as IG. This is equal to VDR times the integral of IG from over a time during the turn on, zero to however long it takes me to get to 10 volts. And then the integral of that current is exactly whatever charge. Charge is, by definition, the integral of current. I mean, my total energy loss is going to be VDR times total QG. I lose that energy every switching period. So my total power loss is VDR QGFS. The result we quickly just wrote at the end of last lecture. This. Questions on that?
The horizontal axis, so 5, 10, 20 are the chart under the curve, or no, it's not chart under the curve.
No, it's directly, it is already integrated. So the charge required to get to 6 volts is 11 nanocoulombs. So it's already integrated the gate current for you. So So it is telling you the cumulative charge to go from zero. See, it hits the origin. It's saying, okay, at zero, I have zero charge. The amount of additional charge that needs to go into the cap to get to this VTS voltage. So here.
Before the energy loss total, wouldn't it just be the original turn on? Because if the loss that you get in charging the cap is then just dissipated, isn't it kind of like double accounting for it?
How do you mean?
Because in the turn on, part of the energy loss we say is charging the cap, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then that charge cap gets lost at the turn off. So total, it should be the only CG just.
Right. So these are the only two loss terms.
Oh, okay.
So you do just get C gate VDR squared. This EGS is the same energy that's lost at turn off.
Okay. I saw one of the arrows of like plus plus, so I thought it made it sound like there was multiple things.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. So this loss plus this loss means everything is lost.
That makes sense.
The EGS is equal to that, or even throw three is equivalent. It's the same thing. That's that energy that went into CGS is now lost.
Makes sense.
Like, this is a justification of how it happens. Never really worry about using this capacitance equation just because there are two at different voltages. And you can calculate directly from QG knowing that all of it gets lost at some point. This loss can be significant. It's predominantly significant in lower power converters and things at very high switching frequencies. You're in hundreds of watts, kilowatts, and above. Usually this thing is very small. See, in the homework problem, you're asked to design this really low power flyback converter. It has low enough current that you can start playing with this VDR and still not have conduction losses kill you. Many applications is relatively insignificant, but it's important to know that this is happening because next we're going to look at what's happening with the actual switching of the MOSFET as we go through this curve. In cases where it is significant, there's really nothing you can do about it. If this is your setup, a traditional gate driver driving a FET, changing these gate resistances or the resistance of the gate driver does nothing. Try to select a different FET with a smaller QG. There's always some trade-off there. One thing you can do that's been researched is use a resonant gate drive. And what it does is generally puts an inductance here in series with the gate and tries to make it so that this charging and discharging of the capacitor is resonant instead of resistive, so that we don't have this fixed loss on these series resistances. The design of that looks very similar to the design of a resonant power converter. So we won't go into detail on it, but it'll look just like, see this as actually a buck boost or something similar, or a resonant buck using these two devices in the gate driver, an inductance, trying to drive this output mode. Later on, after we've analyzed some soft switching converters, we may give a homework problem on designing a resonant gate driver like that. Purpose of that is to not lose all this energy. The only way to not have this energy loss is to get away from resistive charging and discharging of this cap.
Why? So another way is that current itself.
Right, so same idea, whether it's putting an inductance in there makes it look like a current source in terms of high frequency dynamics. Right? So same idea, if you have a current source made with microelectronics, you create a current source out of a FET in saturation, you end up with the same loss mechanism. It's just on that FET in saturation because it's got full voltage and current across it. If you create it with an inductance or create it somehow else externally, then you can get rid of this loss mechanism and have I squared R type losses on these resistance instead of CV squared. Okay, any other questions there? All right. Then from here, what we're going to begin talking about is what happens when we're actually switching in a power converter as we ride through this Q gate curve. Okay. Recall, Q-gate is the integral of I-gate dt. Means one approximation I'm going to make here is, let's just say for a second, the gate current is constant. It means Q-gate is that constant gate current times t. As we actually drive the FET, if I had a constant gate current, this would be the VGS waveform in time. Right. The VGS would actually do this if I went and measured on the device, increase, then plateau, and then increase again. This is what our actual VGS is going to look like. It might get distorted a bit or stretched out because we don't have an exactly constant gate current, but it's going to actually have this plateau in the waveform. And so as we talk about this, I'm going to jump back and forth between this slide and this one, where I've got the output characteristic of the FET, ID VDS, the same circuit here. And we're going to sketch out the waveforms during the FET turn on. Do VGS, IDS, VDS versus time. I'm going to look at the turn on of M2. With IL greater than zero, we'll approximate IL as constant again. Let's get this thing out of the way. Some constant voltage VDC across these two devices. So, let's figure out where we start. So I'm going to say M1 is already turned off. I'm not going to worry about it at all. And when we go to turn on M2, I'm going to say IL is just flowing up through this high side body diode. So at the beginning of this transition, before I start to turn on M2, VGS is zero, IDS is zero, VDS is VDC. And then at time zero on these axes, I'm going to begin turning it on. Try to kind of coordinate between some of these different plots to show everything that's going on. So kind of starting at this point on the bottom right plot. Don't worry about numbers. All this is arbitrary with respect to numbers. We're starting out somewhere here where we're blocking voltage with zero current flowing through the device, fully in off state. And then I'm going to talk about four different intervals here that happen during the turn on. So as I begin to turn on, what I know is going to happen from our previous discussions, IL is up here flowing through this high side body diode. That high side body diode is going to stay forward biased until such a time as I take all the current out of it, get its current down to zero. We'll assume it's ideal, zero reverse recovery, and not care about any of that. So until M2 starts conducting IL, that diode stays on, and the switch node voltage stays clamped to VDC. So what happens as I begin to turn on, I'm going to tell my gate driver to turn on. It's going to turn on this high side resistance. It's going to start having current flow in through the gate, charging CGS. Current's going to be limited by whatever series resistance we have, this RG plus RH. But it'll start slowly and steadily bringing VGS up. And initially, that's not going to do anything, right? So initially, I'm going to start turning on. VGS will begin increasing. But until VGS gets above the threshold, it's still in cutoff, nothing happens. Okay. So this first interval, nothing's gonna happen other than VGS increases. And up until the point where it hits the threshold voltage for the device, stays in cutoff, it just sits there. Right. So in interval one, we don't actually move at all. VDS stays clamped at VDC. There's no current in the device. Still in cutoff. Back a slide, we do see some change here on this gate charge curve. We start at zero. we begin supplying charge until we hit the threshold voltage I pulled for this example device from the table on the data sheet. Typical threshold voltage is 3 volts. So interval 1 is going to be here. Bring the gate voltage up. In this case, we have to supply about 2 nanocoulombs just before we get to the threshold voltage. So then we hit the threshold voltage and the device begins to turn on. As it turns on, it's going to go into active set, right? Starts to turn on, still has 0 current flowing through it. That high side diode is still conducting and clamping the voltage. As it begins to turn on, what we're going to see is the current start to rise. Now it's turning on, but the voltage is going to stay clamped if we need until this drain to source current gets to IL. Our high side diode can't turn off. So during this interval 2, gate to source voltage is going to increase until such a time that the inductor current hits IL. This plot down here, this interval 2, what we're doing is jumping between these different curves of higher VGS voltage until we hit whatever curve is required to get us to IL current flowing through the device. If I take these points, different VGS curves, and plot the current versus VGS instead of versus VDS in the active sat region. That's what's on this next slide. It shows I take these points here and then plot the VGS voltages versus the currents. So this is VGS versus ID. We see we get this more or less linear relationship when we're in active sat. Slope of this in amps per volt. It's called GFS, the device transconductance. In active sat, more or less, we can approximate the behavior by saying IDS approximately GFS times VGS minus VTH. Whatever gate to source voltage we have above the threshold is multiplied by this transconductance to tell us how much current's flowing through it. So then with this, we can say, okay, how high does the gate to source voltage needs to go? Gate to source voltage needs to be higher than the threshold and high enough such that when we multiply this difference by GFS, we get the inductor current. That'll tell us, excuse me, when the end of this interval is. This voltage we're going to call Vm. That voltage is the solution to this equation where IDS is equal to IL. Okay. Get IL over GFS is equal to Vm minus VTH. Okay. On this plot, that's going to be moving up to this point, which will be our Vm. We're still just charging the gate. The VDS on the device hasn't changed because the diode is still locked on. It's not until we remove all current from the diode that the diode can turn off. Again, assuming 0 reverse recovery, 0 parasitics of that diode, right when we get here, the diode shuts off. Yeah.
Threshold to VM, is that the same as the slope from 0 to
if the gate current is constant, it is. If not, it can change during this. So in the actual circuit we drew here, we would be not charging through a constant gate current, but instead charging through a voltage source and resistance. So as this voltage increases, that current will drop some. Mm-hmm. So the voltage across the resistance is dropping. VDR is constant, VGS is increasing. So in this typical gate drive, nothing would be as perfect constant slope as it is shown here. We're gonna neglect that, and I'll explain why in just a moment. We really only care about a small portion of this. So, no, but also yes. Okay, so we're here now. We've moved up on our output characteristic to whatever current is required to get the diode to shut off. At that point, with the diode off, our VDS can finally begin to change. And during interval 3, we're going to bring VDS down to 0. We've already taken over all the inductor current, so the inductor current is just going to continue flowing through this device for the rest of the period, till the next switching action. Important thing is then, from this previous curve, what happens with the gate source voltage? And I kind of already see what's going to happen here. Interval 3, gate source voltage is going to get clamped. As I said before, all of this current is going to end up going up through CGD. And the reason is, okay, as we begin changing VDS, because we have this gate drain capacitance, even though it's a relatively small capacitance, it's going to see a wide voltage swing during this transition when we actually switch the voltage across the device. So if we're switching 100 volts across this thing, I need VDS to go from 100 volts down to 0. And almost that exact same voltage is going to be showing up on CGD. Right? I may have, in this case, 5 volts of VGS. So that means VGD has to be 95 volts, 100 minus 5. Negative direction in this case. It's got 95-ish volts, and that's got to go down to 0 to get down to minus 5 even, so it's going to take the full swing across it during this time where the voltage switches. Because it has such a much larger voltage swing across it, it kind of counteracts the small capacitance. And during this interval 3, you're going to see is that it just dominates, takes over all the gate current. During interval 3, all of the gate current ends up going here. This is the only current available to charge and discharge that capacitor. So even though we're actually seeing the VDS swing across the device, it's dictated in terms of dynamics by the gate current flowing up through the CGD capacitance. How fast can we actually transition? Okay, how quickly can the gate current charge and discharge the CGD capacitance? We often talk about this as a Miller plateau in the gate drive voltage called Miller. It's the same effect in small signal when you saw like right off plane zeros coming out of your common source amplifier because you have this direct feed through in this gate to drain capacitance. Even though it is a small capacitance, its position makes it significant. So that's what's going to happen here. Our voltage gate to source remains locked at this VM. All of the gate current is diverted up to the gate to drain capacitance in order to allow the drain to source voltage to drop down to 0. In this curve, what we're then doing is on a constant gate to source voltage curve, we're dropping down in voltage. Interval 3, we're doing something like that, riding this curve down. at the end of this, we finally get to the knee of this curve where we can jump out of active sat and move over into triode. Then the remainder of the period, we bring the gate to source voltage up. All we're doing is really decreasing the on resistance of the device. Getting from this knee over onto this higher gate to source voltage curve, we have a slightly smaller resistance. But at this point, drain to source voltage has dropped down to zero, dropped out of active sat, and we are looking like a resistance. Last little bit of raising the gate to source voltage, just decreasing that resistance. So that's our full transition. And it's not a great one, like we talked about in some of the intro. This is not the kind of switching curve we would like to see. It means we're spending most of the switching time out here in the high loss region. This output characteristic where we have current and voltage simultaneously drained to source on the device. That's going to result in significant energy loss. And we can actually solve from here what that energy loss is. So let's just plot VDS times IDS. This bottom plot in purple. A during 1, it's 0 because the current's 0. During 4, it's 0 because the voltage is 0. And then in between, we'll have this area where the current increases at a constant VDS. It'll still look like a slope up. Then at a constant IL, the voltage decreases. It's something that looks like this, where the peak here is VDC IL. And the area under this curve is some energy loss. We call it EOV, we call this overlap loss. Comes during switching, during the time where my current and voltage overlap and I have both on the device. Okay. We want to write an expression for this. It's the area of this triangle. I'm going to give this time a name. I'm just going to call it TOV. Time of my overlap. Then this energy is 1/2 times the peak is VDCIL times T overlap. And it happens every switching period, so it's going to result in a power loss. Is EOVFS or 1/2 VDC IL T overlap over TS. Okay. The thing we need to figure out is what is this T overlap? How long does this take? And this is where I'm going to come back and argue that we can treat this as a constant gate current. So what is T overlap? T overlap occurs between when we hit the threshold voltage and when we get out of the Miller plateau. So it's the time it takes us to supply this amount of charge. The overlap goes from when we hit the threshold voltage, this here, until when we get out of the Miller plateau here. Whatever time it took us to supply this amount of charge here, like something, the 10 nanocoulombs minus 2.5, so maybe 7.5 nanocoulombs here. And even though I am charging through something that looks like a voltage source and a resistance, the only time I really care about the time it takes to supply this charge is during this overlap period. And during this overlap period, I spend almost the entire time at a fixed VGS voltage. Okay. So to figure out what exactly this Q overlap is, we would have to look at BDR RH RG and our FET. It's CGD and CGS. And at any moment, IG is VDR minus VGS over RH plus RG. So on the right side here, the only thing that's changing is VGS. And as I go through this full curve, I go from zero to VDR. IG goes from its peak value down to something near zero. But I'm really only looking at this part when I'm calculating TOV. I can say, okay, VGS doesn't change much, only a couple of volts. And it spends almost the entire time locked at VM. So I can say during this overlap, IG is approximately VDR minus VM over RH plus RG constant. This IG overlap. And then for constant IG, my charge is just that IG times time. And I can say my T overlap is equal to Q overlap over IG overlap. Okay, that is an approximation because the voltage does change a little bit during this interval two. Goes from the threshold up to this Miller plateau. I'm gonna say I'm driving it with 10, that 2 volts of change, 20%, it's in the wash, plus the majority of this interval is here in the Miller plateau. This is gonna be a reasonable approximation to say that gate current is just constant. With this type of circuit, it won't be constant over the entire period, but just in that interval, reasonable approximation. So then say, based on my drive voltage and my total gate resistance, here's how quickly I'm going to be able to charge, what my gate current is during the overlap, solve for the amount of time T overlap, plug that in here, get the power loss associated with this. We'll pick up there and talk about the implications of this, what we can do about it, and the turn off transition on Friday. Thanks, everyone.